On Kennet Radio, 13 minutes past 11. A new exhibition has just started at Greenham Control Tower called Uprooted, and it marks 50 years since the expulsion of Asians from Uganda and focuses on how many of those people stayed at Greenham Base for a while, as well as in other places. I'm joined now by local resident Pragna Hay, who has designed the exhibition and who was expelled herself from Uganda at the time with her family. Pragna, could you please start by just describing firstly how and why this expulsion happened?
Okay, so around the 1890s, the British took some of the Indians from India to go to Africa to build the railways, etc. And obviously with colonization, you end up with a bit of a tier system where the British were kind of at the top of the tier. The Asians were put in the middle, so they were almost like the middlemen and in the middle rung and sort of in the front of everything. And the Africans were at the bottom of the tier system. Now, as you can imagine, this would obviously cause some unrest within the country. And so when Uganda had its independence in 1962, this became more of an issue because the locals didn't like it. And Uganda generally and the government there felt that they wanted to hand the country back into the hands of the locals and sort of Africanize the country as well. So unrest started from 1962. And it continued, and then when Idi Amin took power, and he then said that he'd had a dream where God had told him that he needs to hand the country back into the hands of the locals, and that all Asians must go. Bearing in mind, although we were a small population of the country, we were contributing to about 90% of the economy of the country. Whilst we were there as well, the British were helping us to sort of build schools and just sort of advance everybody as much as they can so they could settle into the country. And that in itself is going to cause a lot of unrest. And I guess in some ways, a level of prejudice as well.
What's your personal story within this event?
Okay, so in 72, we were living in Jinja, which is one of the towns from away from Kampala, probably an hour and a half drive away. We were expelled in the 1972 as well. My father was 40 years old. My mother was 33 years old. We used to run a shop in Jinja. And we were not, we didn't kind of own our own property, etc. We were renting. But my father had worked hard enough just to get us into a situation where we were in a position where we could just move up the rung of property a little bit and buy our own property. So he spent years working hard, saving, the announcements made. He cannot take any of that with him in 72 because there was a lot of limitation as to what you could take with you. So that's kind of part of our background that we left. I was 6 years old. We were a family of seven. And we came over here in October 1972.
I understand that when the expulsion happened, the soldiers were quite brutal. Tell us about that, please, if you would.
I think I caught that question. The line kind of went on and off. Yes. Now, obviously, when the military is taking over the town, there are a few horror stories. And when people were trying to leave Uganda as well, there were a number of checkpoints along the way. So they kind of had the authority to do whatever they wanted. And a lot of people were terrorized. Some were actually murdered. In fact, as we were on the coach going from Kampala to Entebbe Airport to leave, somebody in front of our coach, I'm not sure exactly what the reasons were because we were all sat in the coach, was actually shot in front of us. And you could see all the parents just getting all their children's heads and ducking them down away from the window so they don't get scarred for life with what they would have seen out of the windows.
And talk us through your arrival in the UK, if you would.
Okay, so we left Uganda on the 13th of October from Entebbe Airport, flew into Stansted Airport and arrived here on the morning of the 14th of October 1972. At this point, as we arrived, we were popped onto coaches. We were initially driven to Hanson Camp in Yeovil in Somerset, and we stayed there until February, because the camp then closed down on the 16th of February. So we were then relocated over to Greenham Common, and we then stayed at Greenham Common until the 2nd of April 1973, which is when we were given permanent housing in Redditch in Worcestershire.
And Greenham, for those 3 months, had about 4,000 people, is that right? That must have been a sort of small town.
It was a small town. It had its own cinema. It had some shops in there, but you could only use dollars. Had a medical centre. The capacity of Greenham Common Camp was 1,600. And I think in the first 3 months, about 4,000 people went through it. So people would normally stay there on a temporary basis until permanent housing was given, normally after they found a job somewhere or a house came available that they could move to, then they could find a house. So there was quite a turnover at Greenham.
So you then went to Redditch. Tell us about how that was settling in.
Okay, so we were given a council house in a little area of Redditch called Matchborough West. It was, well, it, growing up in a country that you have no experience of, because myself and my younger brother, who was 2 years younger than me, we hadn't started school there, so we hadn't learnt any English just yet. So sitting in a classroom where everybody's talking in a language that you really do not understand was quite tricky. And I guess we're seeing that now with the Ukrainians that are coming over and their children are going to school. It's a similar situation for them, for those of those that don't speak English just yet. And I've got a memory of sort of standing in the corner of the playground and all these young girls are surrounding me and talking to me, and because I didn't understand what they were saying to me, I knew that they were trying to be friendly, but because you don't know what they're saying, it kind of makes you a little bit scared. But obviously, slowly, with time, when you're young, it's a lot easier to pick up languages, etc., and we obviously did pick that up. But the other thing that was difficult at school was the school dinners. We were entitled to free school dinners in those days, but my brother and I, we just would not eat them because they were not what we were used to, and they kind of seemed very alien to us. Eventually, we were given special permission that we could go home and have our lunches at home and then come straight back to school. But it was kind of, even at home when we were cooking, etc., we've got memories of people walking past the house, holding their noses, because obviously we were cooking with spice, garlic, ginger, which were ingredients that were not so readily used in those days. And then, of course, you also had the racism, which was around considerably more in the 70s than it is now.
And after that, I mean, it's a long time to describe, but what's been your experience since you've left school and so forth?
Experience as in the sense of how we've kind of got on with life?
Yes.
Are you referring to sort of racism and all that?
Well, a bit of both, really.
Okay, so I kind of stayed in Redditch until I was 18. I moved over to Canada for a couple of years, came back, and it seemed that as the years went on, racism, from what I saw, seemed less. People were more accepting of the fact that there had been such an influx of people that were not white-skinned. But in the early days, it was quite prevalent. And I think most of us, we kind of just tended to get our heads down and just get on with it and do what we can. There was some racism in the sense that bricks were thrown through people's windows, because locals thought that we were coming here to take their jobs. And I guess we're still getting a little bit of that with immigration issues today as well, where you feel that anybody that's coming into the country are going to take the jobs that the locals could have been doing. But a lot of the jobs that people, well, we would do any job, quite honestly. I remember at weekends, we would go to the fruit farms and pick fruit at 5 o'clock in the morning just to be able to make ends meet. And slowly, slowly, sort of people did those jobs. Those that learned the language went off and did some administration jobs, etc. And slowly we all progressed.
And you yourself?
I went to Canada for a while, came back. I went to university at a later age, did a science degree, worked as a microbiologist, gave that up after a few years because of circumstances. I needed to stay local in Newbury. And then I set up my own businesses, first one being a recruitment business and then a service department business. And I kind of moved back to Newbury in 1998 and have stayed here ever since.
What is on display at Greenham Control Tower? Just talk us through that, please.
Okay, so there's a little bit of history there of what happened and why it happened and how. There are some newspaper clippings from 1972 from Uganda. And then there's the other walls have got stories. There's some creative writing about what life was like for us in the UK. And then there are some personal stories of what people went through. There's also a particularly very interesting story of a nurse who was working in Saudi Arabia at the time. And this was when Idi Amin had fallen ill in the 80s. And she was the nurse that treated him. So she, in this article, she talks about the emotions in her to be face-to-face with the person that expelled her and her family out of the country. And they were forced to go and live a life elsewhere. So she sort of describes how she felt and how she, obviously the professionalism kicks in. But she had that 3-second opportunity to tell him that she was one of those Asians that he threw out of the country. So there's lots of personal stories like that as well for people to read and understand what Ugandan Asians went through and how they felt.
Tell us about the suitcase.
Okay, so the suitcase I've sort of placed there with some items and some words in it to try and bring out the emotions of what people must have felt at the time and the short notice that everybody was given. How do you then decide when you've got only one suitcase to pack your whole life in? What do you take? What do you leave behind? And for a lot of for the women, they didn't know what they would be able to, what cooking utensils, etc., would be available here. And some of the women did actually pack some utensils, etc., and I've displayed some of those at the exhibition just to give an idea of the sort of things that our families brought over here, because they didn't know what to expect. Initially, they didn't know which country they would end up going to, because obviously 28,000 came here to the UK, but there was a percentage that went to various other countries as well. So the suitcase really is there to signify how difficult it was to make that decision. And some of the items that I've placed in there were the sort of items that people brought along with them.
When and where, how can people view the exhibition?
Well, the exhibition, it will be on at the Control Tower until the 2nd of October, 2022, which is quite interesting because the Greenham Common Resettlement Camp opened on the 1st of October, 1972, and of course my exhibition closes a day after that, so that's quite interesting. The opening hours for the Control Tower are Wednesday to Friday, 10:30 to 3, and then it's open at the weekends as well, 10 till 4.
Great. And just finally, if you like, reflecting back on that 50 years, and particularly, I suppose, how things are turning out now, it's quite a topical thing, refugees and immigration. What are your reflections?
Well, I guess firstly, if we look at the situation that is happening in the world today and the forced migration that's happening with the Ukrainians, it's very similar to the forced migration that we had. We were living in a country that we really did not want to leave. The Ukrainians are having the same situation. They're being forced out of their homes and they don't really want to leave. And this is a decision that's been made by one person now and one person back in 1972 that tore apart so many human lives. Personally, when I look back and having been back to Uganda twice now, once 10 years ago when I did the research for the first project 10 years ago, and I was back there end of last year, having sort of seen the changes that have happened in the country, I didn't notice a lot of changes 10 years ago. I noticed a lot more when I went back recently. I'm quite grateful that we came to live in the UK because I think it's opened doors of opportunities that perhaps I may not have had I still lived in Uganda. And I know there's quite a percentage of people that do feel that as well, that doors opened more for us, there were more opportunities for us in the UK than there might have been in Uganda.
You've chosen Dare to Live by Andrea Bocelli, which we're going to play in a second. Who would you like to dedicate that song to, Pragna?
Well, the reason for picking this song is some of the words when you listen to it is coming through adversity and daring to live. And obviously Andrea Bocelli has had an adversity in his life and he's managed it in a very positive way and become very successful. So this song is dedicated to anybody that's had an adversity in their life, is going through something in their life at the moment, and to know that you will get through it. You know, if you dare to live and keep that hope, you will get through it and come out the other side.
Pragna, thank you so much for talking to us. You've described it very well. Thank you so much and good luck with the exhibition.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
By looking at tomorrow, not yesterday, and all the things you left behind, all those tender words you did not say, a gentle touch you couldn't find. In these days of nameless faces, there's no one truth but only pieces. My life is all I have to give. Dare to live until the very last. Dare to live, forget about the past.
Vedessi l'uomo davanti al tuo portone che dorme avvolto in un cartone, se tu ascoltassi il mondo una mattina senza il rumore della pioggia, tu che puoi creare con la tua voce, pensi i pensieri della gente, poi di Dio c'è solo Dio. Vivere, nessuno mai ce l'ha insegnato. Vivere, non si può vivere senza passato. Vivere, è bello anche.
Andrea Bocelli and Dare to Live. And thank you once again to Pragna Hay for a wonderful description of quite harrowing events, but also heartwarming events of the 50 years of Ugandan Asians' commemoration of the uprooting of them from Uganda. And Uprooted is the name of the exhibition, which is on at the Greenham Common Control Tower until the 2nd of October. It's open Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, 10:30 to 3 o'clock, and Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4. And I've been myself and had a look around, and it really is a wonderful exhibition. I really thoroughly recommend you going along to see it. We are going to have Sophie Ellis-Bextor in a couple of minutes, and also I'll be talking to Jane Shillam from Newbury and District Arts Association about